you're a parent or a grandparent, or just have an important teen in your life, you know what a trying and challenging time adolescence can be for teens. Especially today with the abundance of hyper-stimulating media and technology, round-the-clock social networking demands and opportunities, and highly competitive educational demands. With all these challenges today, how can the adults in their children's lives help their teens grow up to be healthy and happy? Well, joining us this morning to share some insights and wisdom from his 28 years of practice in the field of medicine is Dr. Robert Cavanaugh, Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, specializing in adolescent medicine. Dr. Cavanaugh has recently completed a book about getting through the teen years and how to raise happy, healthy teens called Dying to Be Perfect. Well, that's quite a provocative topic. Welcome, Dr. Cavanaugh.
Thanks for coming in. It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
Well, first, tell us how you found, I'm always curious, as a pediatrician, how did you find your way into adolescent medicine? It strikes me that a lot of pediatricians are somewhat wary of that whole developmental group.
And I was one of those who was very wary. I really went into pediatrics interested most in babies and young children. And somewhere along the line, I started working more and more with adolescents. And as I started doing this, I discovered that they really had many, many unmet needs from the medical perspective. And what they were really looking for was somebody to sit down, take a few minutes, listen to them. That's what they want from us more than anything else when we talk to them and survey them. And I started doing that. I drew up what I called a confidential and personal questionnaire. This was probably over 30 years ago now, actually.
That's groundbreaking for 30 years ago.
And it was eye-opening to me. Even if I met the patient for the first time as a total stranger, what has impressed me more than anything, and now I've actually been a physician for over 40 years, is how open most adolescents are to most questions from a perfect stranger most of the time, even the most sensitive questions you can imagine, drugs, sexuality, etc. If that person can just take the time to show that they care about them and that they want to listen to what they have to say.
Well, that's really very telling, actually. And it sounds like that's something that today's medicine really needs to pay attention to in terms of taking time for all patients, probably.
I like to use the word I'm looking forward to the past when we were able to do that more. And it's a constant struggle, but we're continuing to, wage that battle so that they can get more time.
Well, how do you see this whole process of adolescence? You know, when hormones are raging, kids are truly trying to find themselves, and they're in a morass of kind of mixed messages from the culture. I mean, I always think that the culture is saying, be independent, think for yourself, and at the same time, fit in. What are some of the key elements and challenges that you've seen?
I think the culture is telling them how to look, feel, and act, and they get many messages from the culture in general. And I see them as a very unique population. They're not children. They're not adults. They're adolescents. The adolescent brain is not fully matured. It's, in fact, a very busy work in progress, and that maturational process is not complete until at least 21 years of age. So what we try to do is figure out what they're thinking, when they're thinking it, and why they're thinking it. And the key is what developmental level they're at in the transition from childhood to adulthood. And for example, a 14-year-old chronologically may be in many other ways an 18-year-old, and in other ways, the same 14-year-old might be a 10-year-old. And the key to connecting with them and getting into their heads is understanding this process and how to find where they are so you can communicate with greater effectiveness at that level.
And that would be true for their parents as well, or anybody, any caring adult in their environment, as well as the physician.
Absolutely, everybody, yes.
So that's a very key point. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that there is this variability in terms of whether it's physiologic development versus social, emotional development. I mean, you can have an 18-year-old physiologically and a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old emotionally.
Exactly, and that's what's hard for many people to understand, that physically they can look completely mature, And yet, developmentally, they're still a child in some aspects. In other aspects, they might be right at the same level as their physical growth. So the key, again, is not just looking at them physically and chronologically, but also developmentally.
And it also sounds like the key is communication and having an open path of communication, whether you're the physician talking, as you said, or a parent talking, or a caring teacher or guidance counselor, whatever, has to really be able to communicate and take the time to do so.
Correct. And it gets more difficult the older they get, the lesser their home. The key for parents, grandparents, caring adults and friends of all ages would be to stay connected. So the emotional presence of the parent or the grandparent is sometimes even more important than the physical presence. Staying connected, unconditional love, these are the two most important things.
Very interesting. We only have a little bit of time before we have to take a break, but I understand the way you put your book together was looking at adolescence through kind of the metaphor of a space mission. We only have a few seconds left. Just give me an overview of what that means, and then we'll get back to it after the break.
I used this metaphor for many years in the practice, and it seemed to connect with the families and the kids. Think of it, early adolescence is the launch. That's roughly 10 to 14 years. Mid-adolescence is 15 to 17. That's the orbit where they're kind of or seemingly out of touch, but they still need to hear, see, and feel the presence of the home base. And then the reentry when they're coming back to the outside world and rejoining it as mature adults. And when we explain it in that way, people can understand a little bit better how this process works.
That's great. We're going to come back and talk specifically about each of those, those trends and those time frames. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. So please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with my guest, Dr. Robert Cavanaugh, and he's a specialist in adolescent medicine, and we're talking about how to raise healthy and happy teens. So before the break, you were explaining, you just wrote a book, Dying to be Perfect, about how to raise happy and healthy teens, and in the book, you use this metaphor of a space mission, where you have a period where someone is basically being launched, then they're in orbit, and then they return back. So tell us more about that.
One of the main messages that we try to give parents and families is they do come back most of the time. And our mission is to help them come back as healthy, happy adults. And we stress the importance of the home base. So if you can get the visual picture here, the little boy or little girl who used to sit on mom and dad's knee or grandpa or grandma's knee all of a sudden doesn't want to do it anymore. That's the time of the launch. So somewhere around 10 years of age, the emotional process of adolescence is kicking in. And at the same time, a little bit earlier in girls and in boys, the physical changes are starting to occur. So there's a lot going on emotionally, psychologically, and physically. So all of a sudden, this child that has been living, with the family for so long is different in many ways. And so as they get launched, they're going into what we call an era of uncertainty, the outer world, preparing them for the outside world.
And that's where peer pressure takes a much greater role.
An emotional vacuum is created as the shuttle, so to speak, the metaphor I use in the book, leaves the launch pad. So that leaves an emotional vacuum where the parents are not quite there all the time. And so the camaraderie is intensified with peers, often the same sex initially, but then the opposite sex as well, typically. Then at some point, they reach orbit. And that's where they feel unreachable, untouchable. And if you get the picture of an astronaut circling around the globe, the feeling of omnipotence, nothing can happen to me. This is a very powerful feeling, a very powerful position to be in. And the adolescent brain, psyche, basically says, I can take risks, nothing's going to happen to me. unfortunately, and it can, and it does. And what we're trying to do is raise awareness among the family members, parents, grandparents, and the teenagers themselves in a very preventive way of what could go wrong at each stage and how to counteract it. And it's different with each stage, just like it would be in a flight of a space ship. Then eventually, if all goes well, the retro rockets are kicked in, the shuttle slows down, and then all of a sudden they start to re-enter. Now, we know the reentry process can be very, very tricky. It's not always smooth. It's not always perfect. And sometimes it's postponed. Sometimes they like to circle around a few more times. So we have this visual of some kids might like to hang glide. Other kids might want to, get back sooner than later. And other kids really don't want to be back to the home base, you know, for a while longer. And we're seeing more of a trend today where teenagers and then young adults and in their 20s are staying home longer than in years past. And this is very normal and natural. It doesn't mean anything is unusual going on.
It's somewhat cultural, too, because I know there are some cultures, like European cultures, I think of Italy, for example, where it's very normal for
yes.
young adults, even in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s, if they're not married, to live at home with their parents. Whereas in America, you know, they're launched theoretically by the time they leave high school and either are in a college setting or a work setting quite often, mm-hmm. and see it as almost developmentally, you know, challenged to be at home. Except though today, I think with all of the pressures, economic pressures, a lot of kids are kind of coming back, boomerang kind of kids are coming back to live at home.
Yes, and what we're trying to do is help families make this process a little bit easier, a little bit smoother, and understand that it's really an artificial timeline. The adolescent gets to be a certain age, they must leave the house. That's a timeline that's really created by the family, depending on their needs, but it's not written in stone.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the tips that you offer? I mean, clearly you said that you need to understand where that individual is at any point in this adolescent journey. But then how do you influence or how do you guide or how do you affect their path through life in a way that isn't outright rejected or creates all kinds of animosity?
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different for physicians like myself and then parents and grandparents. For all of us, the theme is stay connected. So as a parent, a grandparent, family member, as a physician, we don't want to disconnect with the adolescent, and we do whatever we possibly can to prevent that. For the family, it's the unconditional love and the emotional presence. So those are the foundations. Then it depends on every situation. Every child who becomes an adolescent is going to be a unique individual. So it really depends on which way, you know, they're going in the growth process. So we try to offer tips in what we call the heads first categories. And I could mention that it's an acronym that stands for home, education, abuse. We talk about drugs and safety. And then the first is friends, image, recreational habits, sexuality concerns, and threats of harm to self or others. So in each area, we have certain points that are key that change from developmental stage to developmental stage. So what we do in the book is explain what happens in each one of those categories to the families, and then what's going to come next and how to respond to it. So the tips are really dependent on each individual stage and each individual category. For example, the safety factor as far as designated drivers. I make it very clear in the book that I disagree with that strategy as a primary strategy.
Really?
A little bit. I think the primary strategy is don't drink and don't get in that situation so you don't have to have the designated driver available. So to me, the designated driver strategy is a backup plan. The primary plan, primary recommendation, I feel, and message they should get, which they are not getting from our society, is that they should not drink.
The you clear mean underage drinking.
Underage drinking, yes. I'm talking about adolescents now.
Right.
And then if they do, this is how they can get home safely. The most common cause of death in this age group is automotive fatalities. Mm-hmm. In this country, there are 15,000 a year. Drugs and alcohol are involved in many. If they had a simple safety strategy to prevent getting in the situation as a driver or a passenger, many of those deaths could be prevented. So I would use a designated driver as a backup plan. The primary message is not to get into a habit that could affect your life, ruin your family, i.e. becoming a drug addict and alcoholic.
Right. Clearly, those are things all parents, I think, want to see happen. I mean, to avoid, want their kids to avoid. But getting them there,
yes,
and influencing them during a time where peer pressure, as you mentioned, plays such a strong role, seems to be where the where the rubber meets the road.
Exactly. And sometimes the line gets blurred and the parents want to be a friend and they let the kids drink at their house and they'll have parties at their house. And again, the message is for all throughout adolescence, and we're going up to 21, which also meets up with the legal age of drinking. Drinking should not be allowed. It should never be enabled. So
I read somewhere once talking about teenage drug use and alcoholism, that there is something, as you mentioned, about the adolescent brain that leaves them much more open to the potential for it to becoming a problem, for it to becoming habituated as or habitual type of behavior, becoming addicted in a sense. Is that true?
Yeah, I think they're very vulnerable, and certainly if there's a genetic history of substance abuse in the family, alcoholism, for example, they're at a vulnerable age where they can get started, and it may be very, very difficult for them to stop. So, again, the designated driver concept actually facilitates that, because you're actually saying the message is go out, have a good time, but be sure you have a safe ride home. That's not the message I'm giving in the book.
Very, very good. We don't have very much more time left, but I know you're going to have a book signing coming up, and that's going to take place on November 10th. Where will that be? And
that's going to be at Barnes & Noble in DeWitt on Erie Boulevard at 7 o'clock on November 10th.
Wonderful. And you'll be there, and you'll be able to answer questions?
Yeah, we'll have a brief presentation. We could, very open discussion, very informal discussion with anybody who shows up.
It's fantastic. Well, I think everything you're doing is really, really valuable, and I wish there were more people out there like yourself who are specializing in this whole area of adolescence, because as you mentioned, with all of the stress that kids are under today, they really need a caring, knowledgeable, resource. So thanks so much for joining us. My guest has been Dr. Robert Cavanaugh, professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, specializing in adolescent medicine. And his new book is titled Dying to Be Perfect, How Teens Can Stay Happy and Healthy and Alive. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. So please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is Health Inc. on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.